Welcome to episode 15 of the Pro Wrestling Happenings podcast. I'm your host, Marcos Canales. So yeah, it's WrestleMania week, which means there's a lot going on. I'll probably keep this episode short and sweet since I have a predictions episode to record as well, and then reactions and all that good stuff. So let's go ahead and just jump into news and rumors. The biggest news of the week probably has to revolve around John Oliver and his Last Week Tonight episode that focused on WWE and its practices. For those who are unaware of how the world of wrestling works, the way the WWE and probably every promotion for that matter, they don't necessarily employ their wrestlers, their talent. They are independent contractors who agree to terms with the companies. And it's been an open secret when it comes to how WWE operates. I've known that this is the model for a little while now, and it is always a little icky when you start thinking about it and digging deeper into how the business is run, just because these athletes are putting their bodies on the line continuously, day in and day out, on probably the most rigorous schedule any performer could have, particularly in the WWE. And the track record of the company is not too good when it comes to taking care of its talent. They don't have health care. They don't have great access to, addressing the needs that they have over the course of their careers. I'm by no means an expert at the business, but these are just things that I've picked up over the years. And when you think about the type of job these people are doing, how they're going almost night after night, putting their body through such physical extremes, being away from family, being on the road, traveling so much, probably getting paid well. I mean, I'm sure the pay is good, especially for the higher up people, the main eventers, the top of the card people, and even, mid-carders and lower. I'm sure WWE tries to pay its talent fairly well. But when you add up all the other things going on that I had just mentioned, I can see it being a very grueling workload. And the fact that some of the basic, benefits that a lot of people have at their jobs are denied by WWE is disconcerting. It's not necessarily the most positive aspect of the business. I'm sure the wrestlers would not openly talk about that, especially those currently contracted to a big company like WWE. I'm sure they're very happy to be with where they're at, and they've worked their entire lives to get to where they're at, to get to the top of the mountain, and they don't want to buck anything and get in trouble. And I'm sure they love it. I'm sure you can't do what they do and not love it. But there are probably better ways that a multi-million dollar company, billion probably at this point, could take care of the people who work for them, whether that is fully employing them or just giving them basic coverage. Who knows? I know AEW made a big splash when they announced that they're trying to right some of the wrongs that they've seen in the business, particularly trying to help cover wrestlers when it comes to healthcare, having more equitable pay ranges and pay scales, so that way you don't see a huge disparity between a main event male wrestler and a main event female wrestler. So I think that's one of the big reasons why AEW is starting to catch on before it's even had an event, because they're trying to change the game, not just in front of the camera, but behind it. And those who were aware of how WWE and other big promotions treated talent want to see AEW be successful because of how they want to make those changes. So again, I'm by no means an expert when it comes to the business side of wrestling. These are just things that are have been known for a little while, and it was interesting seeing someone like John Oliver take aim at WWE. It shined a light in a different way for me, and I'll admit, even after watching it, I was questioning whether I still wanted to watch WWE and do things like this podcast, because it does feel a little bit dirty when you put it into that perspective. But like I was saying, I'm sure 99% of the wrestlers love what they're doing with WWE and don't begrudge them, and they just know it's part of the system. That doesn't mean we have to be okay with it. We can definitely try to put pressure on the bigwigs to take care of the wrestlers better. So it's hard for me to judge and say, why are you doing this? Why are you short-sighting yourself? Why aren't you holding out for more or putting yourself in a better situation? It's really easy to say something like that when these people are doing what makes them passionate. I can't fault them for that. But hopefully more and more people will, like I said, put some of that pressure on WWE to change its ways. That's just my two cents on a really complicated and sticky situation. On to more, I guess, positive news. Tennille Dashwood is a free agent. She apparently did not re-sign with Ring of Honor. And I know this is a broken record because I say it a lot. I'm not familiar with Tennille's resume. And I think she was in WWE as Emma. I think I vaguely remember knowing about that. But I've never seen her perform. I think I did actually try to catch something on YouTube recently after I started to learn more and more about the talent that AEW is recruiting. I think I watched one of her matches with Bea Priestley just to see what all the hubbub was about. And it was a pretty good match. I forget which promotion it was for. I definitely thought to myself, like, I could see Tennille going to AEW. So hopefully that's the route she's going to go. Maybe she was not necessarily too happy with how she was handled in WWE. Again, I don't know. I don't know her history with that company. She just seems like a really good fit with AEW. She has a good look. She has a good history. She has a good following, probably due to her time in WWE and on the independent scene and with Ring of Honor. So I could definitely see her being a great addition to that women's roster. So fingers crossed that's what she decides to do. Like I always say in these situations, she needs to do what's best for her. But I think I would definitely like to see her on AEW. That roster is pretty, it's shaping up nicely. I'm liking the signings that they've been doing. Other news, it was announced that Brutus the Barber Beefcake is going to round out this year's class of the WWE Hall of Fame. And, Brutus was one of those guys that I knew of while I was growing up watching wrestling. He was never one of my guys. I was never really big on Hulk Hogan and his group of friends and the people who were around him. Like I've said before, I was never a WWF guy, so I really didn't know who Brutus was until he moved over to WCW and had some gimmicks that weren't as memorable as Brutus the Barber Beefcake, to be fair. I can totally understand why he's more known for that run in WWF. I'm happy for him. I think everyone who makes the Hall of Fame probably deserves it for whatever reason. They probably all contributed something important to the WWE landscape. So it seems like it's a really big class. I can't even run through all of them in my head right now. But, it's just one of those great ways to recognize people who put in some hard work over the years. So I'm happy for them. It was put out there on Twitter that there's a chance that Rhea Ripley might be called up to the main roster. And this news got me really excited. Ever since the second Mae Young Classic, I've been a big fan of Rhea Ripley's. And she just seems tailor-made for the main roster. She has the look, she has the charisma, she has the size. I can see her going to either brand and just dominating. If they decide to keep the two women's championships separate, she could do well on Raw. I think she has that Raw feel to her. And she could just run roughshod over that division. You know, I think that's much like on the men's side, I can see that Raw women's division being filled out with more of the bruiser types. And that's what I see with Rhea. And that's not a slight on her, but I can see her just demolishing people. You have her with Natalya, maybe Beth Phoenix has another good run in her. Maybe have Charlotte somehow end up on that brand. And we'll get into more about the whole women's divisions later, but I can see someone like Charlotte doing well as well on Raw, having more of the taller, more, again, that body type that you think of when you think of WWE and Raw. Regardless, wherever she ends up, I would love to see Rhea Ripley do really well on the main roster. I feel like she's the type of wrestler that Vince could do really well with, and unlike some other NXT call-ups who kind of get lost in the shuffle or fall to the wayside, I can see him really digging what she brings to the table and pushing her pretty far, which would be really, really awesome in my opinion. And other signing and re-signing news, Jim Ross officially signed with AEW. This is a big get for them. He is, to a lot of people, the face and the voice of a whole generation of wrestling. You know, if you grew up in the 90s watching WWF, WWE, you know who Jim Ross is, and that voice, even when his, like, I remember him from WCW. Even then, I knew he was very distinctive, and he was the voice you would hear while watching wrestling growing up for my generation. I don't know if he'll do the same with newer fans or younger fans. They might not even know who Jim Ross is. But I think the core demographic that I can see AEW going for would be those fans who've been around for a little while who are just tired of the same old thing and want something different, you know, who appreciate more of an independent style or want to have that choice and have a good understanding and knowledge of wrestling history. I think that's who will be AEW's bread and butter. And you tell someone like that that Jim Ross is going to be the play-by-play guy, and I think you can convince a lot of people to take AEW seriously. So yeah, really big get for AEW. A pretty big re-get, if that's even a word, for WWE. Apparently the Usos have re-signed, I think it was a 5-year contract with WWE. And I think I've shared my thoughts before. I kind of go back and forth when it comes to the Usos. I think that AEW's tried to stake the claim as being a more tag team friendly promotion. So those tag teams that are disenfranchised with other promotions could go there and be successful, which makes sense when the Young Bucks are heading it up with Cody and Kenny. So it really would make sense that tag team wrestling would be a cornerstone for them. And so everyone would kind of wonder if all the big tag teams are going to end up at AEW. And there was a point where I thought the Usos could end up there as well. But the more I think about it, they do seem like WWE guys. They have that WWE attitude. They have the WWE look. I mean, they have a good style in the ring. I don't know if it's necessarily what you think of when you think of WWE, But they've been one of the top teams in that company for a while now, and some will argue that they kept the SmackDown tag team division afloat over the last couple of months and years, along with New Day and The Bar. So they deserve it. They deserve to have that opportunity to stick around and be successful with WWE. I'm sure there's a few people who are a little bit upset that they're not going off to AEW. Like I said, I feel like that's a good place for them, would be WWE. So, good for them. And then finally, RVD, Rob Van Dam, has apparently signed with Impact. I know that he had like a temporary deal for the show coming up this week. Since it's WrestleMania week, all of these promotions are having shows and cards in the New York area, and I think he was part of Impact's. I forget the name of it. I apologize, but he was going to be on Impact's show. I think he's with Sabu and maybe Lucha Brothers, if I'm thinking correctly. I think that's what the match is going to be. Honestly, this signing really doesn't do much for me. I am trying to get more into Impact, but a name like Rob Van Dam isn't gonna convince me to watch any more than I would have before, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I wasn't never into ECW. It was hard for me to watch ECW when I was watching wrestling. I tried watching it when it started on TNN, and the production value was too shoddy. I didn't know any of the wrestlers. I wasn't drawn in by Extreme Rules wrestling or hardcore wrestling at the time. So that was just a promotion that never piqued my interest. So names like RVD, Sabu, Tommy Dreamer, I know of these names, but I was never really interested in what they provided. Even when they moved over to, like, say, WCW, Raven was okay. I kind of liked Raven's thing. I guess really the luchadors who came over from ECW were the ones who made the biggest impact on me. So, Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, to a lesser extent, Perry Saturn. Like, those are the names that I really remember, not because of what they did in ECW, but when they made the move over to WCW. That said, I was always interested to see Masato Tanaka and Mike Awesome matches. I never had a chance to see any of those. But whatever I did read about those matches, those sounded interesting to me. I just never had a chance to watch them. But I digress. So yeah, not necessarily an ECW guy. So, RVD's coming back to Impact doesn't really do anything for me, but maybe he'll be able to get more people interested in the product, and if that's the case, then by all means, that's great. So yeah, that wraps up all of the big news of the week, and I'm gonna go ahead and start moving into my thoughts about Monday Night Raw. And like I always do, I'm just gonna focus on some highlights. I'm not gonna go through the entire show. The biggest match of the night had to be that six woman tag match with Becky, Ronda, and Charlotte taking on the Riot Squad. And of course, I'm gonna lament the fate of the Riot Squad, my favorite trio on Raw, being served up to the main eventers again. And once again, they're just taking this storyline and just adding too much zaniness and convolutedness to it because of the whole stipulation that if any one of the three main eventers cost their team or turned on their team, they'd be removed from the main event at WrestleMania. And I guess they had some fun with that, but the match was so short that it was a non-factor. But that did lead to the moment of the night in a lot of people's opinions. Which was the big brawl between the three of them that started off in the ring and ended up on the rampway when they were getting arrested and ended up in the backstage area, and cop cars were involved and cops are being kicked and they just were doing all this madness. And at first, I wasn't too thrilled about it all. I guess just the match itself was a dud in my opinion. And when they started brawling, it felt very, it was a cluster. It was definitely a cluster, and it made me worried about how things would come off on Sunday. I really started worrying about the quality of the match just based on that. And I know it's a different situation, but just seeing them trying to beat the crap out of each other in the ring just wasn't interesting or entertaining in my opinion. It was just, again, overdone mess. But then when it shifted to the backstage area, that's when it did get more entertaining. Just seeing them go all out and trying to hurt each other and being handcuffed and having to try to kick each other. And that one moment when Becky and Ronda were in the back seat and they just take that little pause and look at each other, which made it work. And then they start kicking at each other like kids. And that knee, that running knee that Charlotte hit Ronda with was pretty great. And even the aftermath was kind of funny. Ronda posted her quote unquote mugshot, which, fair play. I thought that was pretty funny based on the whole hubbub that was created about Becky's mugshot. So at the end of the day, I was entertained. It was still a little too sloppy in my opinion. I'm expecting more from the three of them this Sunday. It wasn't necessarily the appetizer I wanted for that match, but they did end up pulling it off in the end. So kudos to them. Other highlights for me, Heavy Machinery, their win over Bobby Roode and Chad Gable was, I took note of that because I wasn't surprised that Heavy Machinery won, but I think they're finally starting to plant those seeds of dissent between Roode and Gable because Bobby just gave Chad this look like he was frustrated and disappointed and mad. And Chad looked like he was apologetic. And while they didn't do anything that night, I think that's the first step towards them breaking up. And I'm of two minds of it. I've always thought that they were an entertaining tag team. I think they had a rough start, especially when Chad was like a little kid trying to hang on to one of the older kids. He was always trying to get in Bobby's good graces. And Bobby was reluctant at first, and I thought that worked pretty well. And then when they started getting on the same page, it really started to gel. They had that brief run with the tag titles. And even when they were being portrayed as heels, I thought that was something that could work. I think a lot of people think Chad is a natural face, which I get, but I can see him being a good cocky heel as well. And so I was really interested in seeing them be bad guys, a heel tag team. I don't know how that would throw off the balance with the rest of the division on Raw. It seems like they have a lot of heel tag teams. But that was something that I was hanging on to. I thought that was a good idea. But it seemed like everyone online in particular knew that this day was coming, that they we're going to break them up and have Bobby turn on Chad and start a feud between them. And it probably went a lot longer. Their tag team lasted a lot longer than some people might have thought. And they're thinking like this was the natural progression. And I get that, but I would have liked them to stick around a little bit longer, especially as a bad guy, heel team, like I mentioned before. So we'll just have to wait and see what they decide to do with those two. But I kind of feel like there's some wasted potential there if they decide to go that route. Finn Balor coming out, or not coming out, but transitioning into the demon in front of Bobby Lashley's eyes was a little cheesy. I kind of chuckled in a not a good way when I saw that happen. That transition just wasn't working for me. And it's also it also makes it feel kind of anticlimactic, since the demon's undefeated, and if he's going to be the one facing Bobby Lashley, you put two and two together, it's a pretty easy answer. So they either told us that the demon's going to win and Finn Balor's going to reclaim the Intercontinental title, or they're setting up a swerve and having Bobby Lashley be the first one to beat the demon. Which I guess there's the only real two options. It's not rocket science to put those two conclusions out there. So we'll just have to wait and see what they do with the Intercontinental title. I'd like to see Finn win it again, but I'm also ready for this feud to be over. But I'll get more into that with my predictions episode. And the last thing that I wanted to talk about when it comes to Raw didn't happen on Raw, which seems to be becoming more and more. That seems to be like the thing that happens now is big announcements or semi-big announcements are made on WWE.com or YouTube instead of the actual show. But they had a segment where Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins approached the Revival after their title defense and challenged them at WrestleMania. And the Revival didn't give a straight answer, but that's if that match happens, it'll be up there on my list of matches I want to see. I've been pretty open and honest about my love for Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins. And I really want to see them have that opportunity at WrestleMania, and I want Curt Hawkins' streak to end at WrestleMania. I want them to win the tag team titles, and that would be the perfect place for it to happen. It'd be a feel-good WrestleMania moment. So I'm crossing my fingers that that is something we're gonna get, and they decide to give Hawkins and Ryder those belts at WrestleMania in New York, where they're both from. I don't think you can write a better ending for that story or mini story. I mean, it only kind of came up recently, it feels like, even though there have been some connective tissue between those two teams the last couple of months, but this is the payoff I'm most excited for right now. So yeah, those are my thoughts on Raw, and let me go ahead and just share a few more about SmackDown Live. It started off with the Kevin Owens show, the KO show, but And Kevin Owens had AJ Styles and Randy Orton as his guests. And, this promo worked for me. A few weeks ago, I probably would have been a lot less interested in this match than I am right now. I know that they were kind of teasing it. I don't feel like they built it up appropriately because it's not something I'm dying to see. But over the last few weeks, they've really amped it up and they've really made me care more about these two and their match. I like the WWE versus indie slant that they're taking. I like AJ and Randy just going after each other personally. I think their back and forth has been pretty brutal and entertaining. And, this further solidified that and it made me more interested in it. I loved it when KO dropped the mic and just bolted out of the ring. That was just perfect timing. And I can see why so many people like Kevin Owens because he's got all the tools. I want to see more from him. But this segment did what it was supposed to. And now I care more about this match than I did yesterday, so or 2 days ago. So kudos to them as well. Another match that it surprised me a little bit was that 18-person tag match. And when I first saw it, I was like, what are they doing here? It was so clearly a way for WWE to promote the two battle royals at WrestleMania, two battle royals most people don't care about. And it gave them something to do and reminded everyone that, yes, these people will be doing something at WrestleMania. It started out, I think, with Nikki and Zelina, and it was okay, but I'll watch anything Nikki does, Nikki Cross. She's just amazing. It quickly devolved into chaos. Like, a lot of things have happened this week. And it was a lot more, it was more entertaining than it had any right to be. Some people got their spots in and had some highlights, and it just became this crazy mess. And usually I don't like crazy messes, but for some reason, I don't know what it was. This was entertaining to me. I like that Asuka was the last person standing at the end because it was a crappy consolation prize for her, but at least she was, at least there was some focus on her. So maybe WWE realizes that what they've done with her has been tragically bad, and they're taking steps in the right direction to make amends. At least that's what I'm hoping. Maybe I'm reading way too into that ending, but you know, a guy can hope, I guess. And then the biggest highlight of the night was that contract signing. Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston finally made it official. And I'll be honest, I was surprised that there wasn't another hoop for Kofi to jump through. At the end of last week's SmackDown, when Vince said that he's interested to see if a B-plus wrestler could beat Daniel Bryan, I felt like that was him teasing a triple threat between all of the New Day. Since he called them a B-plus tag team, he's called Kofi Kingston a B-plus player. And it wouldn't have surprised me if he had all three members of the New Day fight each other for that spot. And he would probably put that stipulation, if anyone lays down for Kofi, they'd be fired or something like that. Kind of like what they did with the Usos being punished for what they did during the Gauntlet match. So I was fully expecting some shenanigans. And I was a little bit shocked that it was so straightforward. But both of them had killer promos. Daniel Bryan, a lot of people, they're saying he's the best heel in the business right now. It's hard to argue with that. He is doing phenomenal work as the top heel on SmackDown. And Kofi's really capitalizing on his momentum. He's probably the number one babyface right now. That's even taken into account Becky Lynch. I think a lot of people have cooled on Becky due to her storyline being mismanaged. And Kofi's, while still pretty, you know, zany and still pretty overbooked, his story still at least makes sense right now. You can still see what the point of his story is. And it's harder for me to say that about Becky's storyline. So I truly believe he's the number one face on SmackDown. And the crowd let everyone know it. And it was just great stuff between the two of them. I'm happy that it's official. Hopefully nothing changes between now and Sunday. I know there have been some rumblings and speculation that someone else might be added to that match. Maybe Kevin Owens somehow gets in again, or Mustafa Ali somehow gets into that match. It does seem like they want to have as many multi-person matches as possible on this card, which, in my opinion, doesn't do any favors to those matches. I feel like it actually dilutes them. But you want to have as many people participate, I guess. At least that's what Vince is probably thinking. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised if they somehow shoehorn in someone else into that match. But I would hope that the backlash they've received with the women's main event match would dissuade them from doing that. But you never know. You never say never. So that wraps up this episode of the Pro Wrestling Happenings podcast. I wasn't able to watch 205 Live or NXT this week because I wanted to get this episode out. But I will be recording my WrestleMania predictions episode soon, so come back for that. If you want, follow me on Twitter at PWHappenings. And until next time, take it easy, everybody.